If you're imaging that your rib cage is a series of concentric circles, and the shoulder girdle is a cape loosely thrown over those circles, and it's fastened at the manubrium. So we're giving tactile aid at the manubrium and then the same level in back. Okay, you can do that, Penny. Right. Now, see the circles becoming smaller and smaller and smaller. Remember, they're inside the cape, becoming smaller and smaller and smaller. Especially the first rib circle, which is at the level there of the manubrium that you're touching in front. Let them become smaller and smaller and smaller around the central axis. It's a variation on the closing of the umbrella. And then you finish off with the sternum sliding up to the atlas, which is between the ears. So touch at the temporomandibular joint, right under it, behind the jaw, in front of the mastoid processes. Okay, now you can release the tactile aid, and we can all now just balance very easily on the femur heads, and we can watch the breath resting on the femur heads just as the weight does. You let the weight out of the armpits, sternum slides up toward the atlas, and the breath is resting on the femur heads. And a little bouncing. Right, now we can come over and have a seat. This morning, as we did yesterday, I'm going to take you through a series of processes based on the information we have taken up. And as we go through them, I'll keep adding new things. I want to weave in new information with the old. So we'll begin with just getting on the sit bones, whatever that means to you at this point. And the head easily between the two sit bones. And the head is resting on the top of the spine at the atlanto-occipital joint here. I Now, could you watch the spine begin to grow like a tree upward against the occiput, that is the underside of the skull? First thing you're doing is you're visualizing where it is. That is where the spine is contacting the skull. You know it's between these two points. So you get that clearly in your mind. And then as you see the support between the two ears, you let the mastoid processes in the back of the jaw melt down the sides of the neck. And as that is happening, you watch the spine growing like a tree up under, taking the head up to the ceiling, if you want to see that. Doesn't matter. But these you want to see still melting downward. You just, a few moments ago in standing, slid the sternum up to the lateral-occipital joint. And this is really where they converge as an image. Everything goes up. That's just to remind you of some of the tensile forces of the length of your body, so that as you sit on the sit bones, you don't take it into collapse, but that you still have the upness. And then you can let that go into the recesses of your mind as we move on to letting the femur heads rest in the acetabula. Let that happen. And as they are resting in the little cups there, like golf balls and golf holes, let's just swallow. Just swallow to get familiar with your swallowing reflex. Now, could you imagine that the two acetabula are mouths and they swallow the femur heads? Let them swallow the femur heads. Another way to stimulate the nervous system with an image that's just a little unusual that you can play around with. Let's let the armpits soften. You might want to touch them. And if there's any weight being pulled into the armpits, if you're holding yourself up by your armpits, think in terms of releasing that hold, that weight, and let it drop downward as if you were letting the sides of the ribs slant down, fall away from the armpits. The reverse of that would be to try to pull the ribs up into the armpits, making them parallel. Let them slant the way they do by softening your armpits and letting the weight drop out. And let the weight drop out of all the ribs. No weight to be held in the sides of the ribs. The sides of the ribs are soft. In your thinking. By contrast, if you want to think support, think of the sternum either sliding up to the atlas or the puppeteer giving you support there. Without voluntary movement, just arbitrarily position yourself. Really try to get the experience of that. Just think it. And then later, as you get the experience, you can follow it with a gentle, voluntary movement. as all this is happening, the tongue is resting in the mouth. And to help the tongue rest in the mouth, we'll touch the neck pit under here. And let it soften. Let it soften. And that lets the tongue rest in the mouth. The breath was under or over or around the tongue, but there's no tongue effort to breathe. And if you're doing that, the air will go directly into your pelvic balloon down below. As you're imagining the pelvis as a balloon, and as you inhale, the balloon will expand. Exhale, it empties out. So the breath bypasses the tongue, really. Now, a companion image to go with this, I'm going to work now on the inside of the mouth, thinking about the roof of the mouth. Up under here, what I'm calling the roof of the mouth. And there you have a section which we refer to as a soft palate. And quite often we keep that soft palate tight, rigid. So to affect the soft palate and the muscles around the face and the skull, we're going to use an overall image of the roof of the mouth, instead of being flattened downward, as having an arch, a very high arch. You're going to see the arch coming up under the skull. Now, the way we're going to do that is to imagine a line from between the two center upper front teeth behind the gum, and going up behind the nose, and then on up behind the forehead, and up under the skull. This is following the median sagittal line until you get to the top where the median coronal line would cross, right here, center. That, you'll imagine that the sides of the roof of the mouth narrow toward that center line as you go up to the top, and it gives you a kind of a peak, a real high peak. Of course, that's image because the roof of the mouth is just an arch in here. It's a nice arch, but it's not up to here. But we're going to imagine it going up to here. So let's give ourselves some tactile aid for that. Let's take our fingers and put them on the outside of where we're imagining on the inside. You're in front of the two upper front teeth there. You're imagining that you're behind them. So you take the line on up the nose, thinking behind the nose and behind the forehead and under the skull there. You're inside in your thought. And you get to the center point on the top of your head, and you leave your hand there. And then take the other hand and narrow in towards center, thinking of narrowing in towards the center line there. All the way up to the top. And as you narrow in towards the center, the peak gets higher and higher. Now, where you're touching on the top of your head should be soft. Think it's soft, and that lets the peak, that lets you experience the inside there of the skull as having a high peak. And if when you have done that to your satisfaction, let your hand rest, if we have time in constructive rest, I want to do that having a partner give the tactile. It will be a little different experience. Now that, in addition to the tongue, is a marvelous set of processes to help get the head centered. Let's see how our time is running. All right. I think that I have to give you some papers now that Carol passed on to me. And then we'll continue. This is the sheet of names and addresses of the class. On the top part of the pile is page 2. On the bottom is page 1. Take one from the top, one from the bottom, and pass the pile to the person next to you. You get yours. You have yours already?
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. Yes, if you got any before, don't take them. And Betsy, Carol has a set for you. Danny, you have some announcements to make? You will. All right. Okay. All right. Any other announcements? Okay, please.
He bought these new drums last year, and he wants to send them now because we are leaving.
Oh, well, I can use them.
What kind of drums are they?
I mean, big drums.
That's right, that's a good question, but I don't know anything about them. Well, brand new and
the drum set.
Yeah, the drum set.
Oh, it's drum set.
All right. All right, if anybody is interested in drums, please
see. You may call me if you're interested, or if somebody, some friend of yours is interested.
You can put your phone number, name and phone number on the bulletin board.
Okay, and all of you have the phone number, Louisa, okay. On the
but
thing.
That's the Italian phone number. Oh. I am feeling in Menlo Park until the beginning of next week.
Oh. Okay. Okay.
Do we
have any left over? They're all gone.
Oh, that's the
you didn't get any?
Is that all?
Should be. Take one, top and bottom. The other section I call the ankle foot. Now here is what the ankle foot is. The three medial toes and their metatarsals, which really abut up against the cuneiforms. And then the cuneiforms, which abut against the navicular. And then the navicular, which goes right up against the talus. So taking the three medial toes and metatarsals and tarsal bones there, that's ankle foot. Heel foot, I'm calling the lateral two phalanges, metatarsals, the cuboid, and the calcaneus. Now that's a line of demarcation between those two sections. It's very clear as you look at the top view of the foot, which is called a dorsal view, looking at it from above. And the reason that I divide it is that as I do a lot of different exercises on the foot, I think of the ankle foot as being for the most part, the area of the foot that has the most tensile support, that is, it needs the most muscle activity in support. Mm-hmm. That's right, it's the inside three toes with their metatarsals and the tarsal bones, the cuneiforms and the navicular and the ankle bone. Okay. So that's the part that needs most of the tensile support, principally through this longitudinal arch here, where you have to have quite a bit of muscle support. Whereas in the heel foot, that's giving you most of your compression support. That's where more bone is contacting floor for compression support. So I use really only the three inner toe lines as thrust lines, because that's principally where you're getting that kind of support, that thrusting into the arch. Now, we'll do the same tactile aid that we do for the leg. We're going to do this right now on the foot, where we draw our fingers back across the toe lines back toward the keystone, which is the talus. Do that right now. Just take your fingers and run them back towards You can do it over both the top and the bottom of the foot. Okay. And then, after you've done that with your hands, the tactile aid, let's use the floor as tactile aid. Let's imagine that the foot is like a soft piece of cloth, and you're going to peel it off the floor. I'll take my sock here to demonstrate that. Let's say the foot is like a soft piece of cloth, and you just peel it off the floor and then let it peel back on. Now, as you come off the floor, think back to the keystone. As you come back on the floor, think back toward the keystone. It's the same thing you've been doing when you have been taking the line of movement back into the femur socket. Let's do that on that foot for a moment. Okay. Keystone is the keystone of the arch. It's like the center of the arch. The keystone is actually in between these two ankle bones here. Okay? And they are, let's look at it on the foot again so that you see where it is. They are, see, that's where your keystone is, right here between these two bones, right here. Now, effectively, you might be thinking of it a little forward of these actual lines here. You've got play in there. You can think of it as being a little forward there. The idea is that in order to be balanced, you don't want to be either totally on the ball of your foot or totally on the heels, because if you are, you are not in balance, and you're not really efficiently poised for quick, effective movement. The people who know this best are the martial arts, because they work with being at center. See, you never know. The idea about, I think, that being on the balls of your feet which is what a lot of physical education teachers, came from the fact that quite often you are going to move forward and you have a head start on that forward move. But you don't always know whether you're going to be moving forward, particularly, say, in the martial arts, where you're in combat. You may have to move backwards. If you're already forward, then you see you're off balance. And that's what the good martial art combatants are looking for. They want to see if you're off center, and then they'll take advantage of that and use that split second that you might need to get back to center, to move backwards if you have to throw you off. So it's just a matter of trying to get your weight centered back over the keystone in the foot. Okay, let's do the other one now, just quickly, and then I want to do a little walking exercise with this. Just take the sense of the weight going back to the keystone. Lay to yourself, do the foot peel on the floor. Just peel the foot off the floor. Now here, I'm not asking you to point the foot to make it simulate the hanging, but let it hang where it actually will hang, just to get in touch with how your foot hangs. Peel off, and then you're coming back on, thinking back to center. Now I think we're ready to come to standing. I'd like to take you through a little process in the standing position. Make that change nice and easy. Now, in the standing position, we're going to do, let's come out onto the floor because I want to walk with it, but first we'll do it in place. Let's come onto the floor a moment. Peel the foot off the floor and then peel it back on. Peel it off. And then back on. Okay. Now, before you continue, here's another good little principle you can work on to get better locomotion, more efficient. It's not a good idea to put weight, to start bearing weight on the foot through the leg until you come back to center. In other words, it's not a good idea to do that, usually, unless you're doing some special movement. But rather to have the weight come back to the center, and then you have the weight over it. So let's practice in place a minute, and then we're going to walk with the same principle. Let's just peel the foot off the floor, peel back on, thinking back to your keystone. When you come back in your thought and physically, then you put the weight on it again. Try it again, just simple here, and then we'll take in the walk. And then back, right on. Okay, now let's do the other leg, the one you didn't do before. Peel it off. And then simply peel it on, taking the weight after you've come back to center with your thought and after you've had the foot come back completely on the floor and back on. Okay, now again, it's the same thing as you walk. You'll take a small step, a half step, peel off, peel on, and shift when you've peeled on mentally and physically. Okay, I'm going to walk backwards so I don't run into you, but walk forward for a while, then I'll have you walk backwards. Get a sense of peeling off and on and off and on and off and on. This time, even the 2 feet up as you peel on. Okay, now let's balance on the femur heads. Now, wherever you experience your weight on your femur head, would you also experience the point towards which you've been peeling as being under the femur head? That's the next thing you want to begin to connect up. Now, you walk backwards, I'll walk forward. And take a short steps. So peel off and on and 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 off. Peel it off, and on, and 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 peel off. This time, bring the feet even. And again, let's balance on the femur head. And wherever you experience weight on the femur heads, let the point toward which you're bringing the weight of the foot be under that. This is just to bring together really two experiences so you begin to get a sense of the weight being over the keystones, or approximately thereof. Okay, now let's come back to the benches for a moment, and I want to do one more foot exercise, and then we'll go into constructive rest. Muscles attached to the keystone, the talus. The keystone in an arch of a building does not need any cement to hold it in place because the opposing forces buttress it very efficiently in place. And Todd maintained that the keystone of the foot, the ankle, didn't need any muscles to help maintain its position because it was a keystone. It's an interesting thought. At any rate, while there are no muscles touching or rather attached to the talus, there are muscles attached to the other tarsal bones, and they tend to do this kind of action. That is, it's a kind of a knitting together of the bones of the foot. That's why I have this strung up this way with nylon cords going through the bones, which they don't do in the foot, of course. But this is the kind of an effect you get. The point being that, as I see it, good muscle action in the foot is constantly aligning and realigning the bones of the foot so that it can help direct those thrusts that we worked on as an image toward the keystone, so that the foot is at all times transmitting the weight and the counter thrust of that weight efficiently. Now, when you think about it, these little slim bones, which have to handle to transmit the entire weight of the body. You have 2 feet, of course, but they're still rather small when you think about it, because they have the collective weight of the entire structure to transmit to the supporting surface. If that isn't done efficiently, there can be a great deal of stress placed on the structures. I marvel at the fact that we don't have more foot problems than we do. People complain about their feet once they begin to get in trouble. But considering the lack of attention and care we give them, I am surprised that we don't have more trouble with them than we do. So this centering action that we've been doing is the first step in trying to get a better use of the foot. What I'm going to do now is to sort of make a leap, because I want to do a little exercise with you that will help you to voluntarily maybe activate the muscles closer to the arch that help to do this knitting action. Now here's what we're going to do. We're going to relate the foot to the hand. Take your hand and put a finger in the center of the hand. I want you to lightly grasp that finger with the center of your hand as if you're going to pick it up. Okay. Now, go down to your foot and touch what you feel might be comparable to that center in your hand and your foot. It should be somewhere in the vicinity of the ankle. It may be an inch or two forward of it even, but somewhere in the vicinity of that ankle bone. You find a spot where you feel a similar but less articulate point of contact. And we're going to call that, got it, the center of the foot. And would you now, with a very small movement, try to grasp your finger with the foot center, as if you were going to lightly grasp that finger. Very lightly. Now it's going to cause your toes to curve downward, and that's all right. Don't let the toes take over. They can work, but try to get your thinking back to the center around the arch of the foot in that area. Okay. And then you can put the foot on the floor. Imagine a finger coming out of the floor up against that center you just found. And grasp that imaginary finger with the center of the foot, just the way you did with the center of your hand. It's a small movement. It doesn't have to be so large. You want to just get in touch with that. It's almost like trying to wiggle your ears. You know, small movement, not something so heroic. And then pick up the finger as you grasp it. Pick it up. Okay. And again, let's pick it up. Now let's go to the other hand and put our finger in the center of this hand, the one you didn't do before. You can, if you wish, use opposing hand and foot. That's okay, but I just want you to work with a set you didn't work with before. And you grasp it. And then we'll come down to the foot. We're going to do the same thing with that. Put our fingers in the center of the foot. Touch it. And a little grasping, just as if you're gonna. It's as if the finger was like a bird egg, and you're gonna grasp it and not crush it. Just grasp it. put the foot on the floor. And now let's see an imaginary finger coming up against that center, and you're going to grasp it. And that's going to cause, as you do that, your arch to come off the floor a little bit, you see, which is fine. Very small movement. And then pick the finger up with your foot. Pick it up with your foot. Now, that little activity in the picking up is what we would add to the foot peel. In other words, when I had you do the foot peel, it was passive. You just picked the foot up, let it peel and hang where it was going to hang. But the foot in good use, remember I said it should sparkle, it should twinkle, it should scintillate. This is what helps to make it do that, so that when you pick it up, it's active. It is not dead. It's not dead weight. It needs to have a certain amount of vitality. You know, Soto and I were talking yesterday about the late Bruce Lee, who had such marvelous movement. And in particular, his foot movement was that to perfection, absolute perfection. When I watched that man move, I could see inside his shoes the foot, Bruce Lee. Bruce Lee was the great martial art. He made a lot of silly movies, but great, really great movement in them. Soto, I think you said that the highlights are available in a TV film, videotape you can buy. I would hardly commend you to that. It's his foot, you could just see it being very alive inside of his shoes. You could see that as he moved. At any rate, we're going to get up in just a minute and practice that. But before, I want to give you another piece of imagery. Since the organization of the muscles of the foot, as they become highly sophisticated there, they help to maintain this arch, this longitudinal medial arch. I have a basic image. And again, I'm sort of skipping here and there to try to give you major pieces of information to use the imagery we're doing. So that I leave you with, I didn't want to leave you with just the two-dimensional image of coming back to the keystone, but with the third dimension, which is the height, which you have to see. That center has to have a height. So what I give as an image is to imagine that the center back to which you've come in your imagery is on a higher level than the heel and the ball of the foot. So that you're imaging height at that center. In other words, you don't want to think flat-footed. You want to think of the center of the foot being raised a bit. That's what the finger coming up in there is designed to do. So a lot of times, well, let's do it right now. Come to standing, and we'll just put this right into imagery and practice. As you stand, remember to make that nice transition now. Smooth. Okay. As you are balanced on your femur heads, and as you see the centers of the feet that you've just experienced, and I call these experiential centers because they're not absolute, where you experience the center of your foot. Think of the fingers coming out of the floor against the centers, which tend to raise those centers as you image your heel and your ball of your foot or your toes dropping to a level below them. You want to see that. And then let's softly grasp those fingers with the centers of the feet. A little soft grasping. Very softly do that. And then you can walk around a bit with a soft grasp as you take a step. be very dexterous about it, not heavy-handed or rigid, but just work a little bit on it. Can be a little more than an image, just so that the foot becomes alive.